I'm Faith Middleton. It's great to have you joining the party on the Food Schmooze here on WNPR in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. My food buddies are here. Christopher Prosperi, senior contributor of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, senior producer Lori Mack, and producer Jonathan McNichol. Hey, everybody.
Hello.
You can tell your friends no matter where they live. They can listen to the Food Schmooze from anywhere in the world, as many people do, at WNPR.org. I can't wait to talk about some of the things on the show today. We have this lemon crab pasta and quinoa lobster salad for you. And those are on the website right now at WNPR.org. Search programs for the Faith Middleton Show, and you'll see that Food Schmooze link there. The cookbook author is a yacht chef for Barry Diller and Diane von Furstenberg. Wait until you hear how her life goes, and that's in our third segment. The recipe that I mentioned to you that you don't have to write down, their ingredients, what we're going to give them to you, I think it's just five, to make scallops with a blood orange sauce. So easy and so good. Yeah, I know. You're a fan, right? And me too, of both those things. Okay, we have fun facts. For all of you. Farmers and folks, as you know, have been making maple syrup around these parts and far beyond, going at it. So more of us are getting into the art of making maple syrup, it turns out, across New England and in New York. But the United States, this is an interesting thing to me, the United States is still number two in the world. And I think, how can that be when Vermont makes 1.3 million gallons of this amber gold? They just did that last year alone.
That's so quite a fact.
But that's not even half?
Vermont all by itself makes 1.3 million gallons a year. And, you know, they are the leader in New England, but still, and we're number two in the
U.S. So where is it?
Okay. So there's a friend and neighbor making much, much more than that. That would be Canada. The Canadians produced a whopping 80% of the world's maple syrup.
It's right on their flag.
They have.
Oh,
that's
good
right.
Point.
They have cornered the market on maple syrup.
Almost 90%.
80%.
Oh, 80%. Yeah. So only 20% comes from the United States, and the largest producer is a million gallons?
In one state,
yeah.
In the United States.
Wow. So think about how much Canada produces a year.
Yeah.
Well, it's there are. When people, they don't steal jewels in Canada.
They steal sap.
It's like, you know, the lobster wars around here. So after that, it's an issue of quality, and that's where the debate begins. We do know this. Maple syrup is amazing stuff. It's the lifeblood of a tree. I can't get over that. This is a question for you. How many unique flavor compounds have been detected in maple syrup by taste scientists? How many do you think?
I couldn't even begin.
Yeah, because every time you taste maple syrup, you get something else.
Yankee Magazine tells us 300 different flavors are in maple syrup.
Yeah.
So it's very complex. And I remember people taking it to Europe long ago, and the chefs didn't even know what to do with it, but they started to get excited. And then we started getting letters in the Food Schmooze because we were asked constantly, you know, what should I bring to Europe? Do you have any ideas? And we would say maple syrup.
Please stop bringing me maple syrup when you come over here.
The poor friend.
Listen, my whole family's in Europe, and there's only two things we bring over.
Yes.
Maple syrup and bourbon. There really are the two things that are truly only here. Mm-hmm. Right? This part of the world, it's maple syrup and bourbon. And they go great together. Just in case you didn't know.
Okay, I have more fun facts for you. Let's see if you can answer. I found this in Travel and Leisure magazine. Tell me, in Belgium, because we know how big they are with French fries. Chris, your favorite food. What year did the Belgians invent French fries for the rest of the world?
I'm just going to throw a number out, 1500s.
Wow.
Can I do a 100-year span?
1500? Okay, yeah.
1960.
Why don't we see?
Because that's the start of everything.
No,
really? 1960?
I'm picturing things like the Tudors, you know, eating French fries on television.
Oh, my gosh.
On television.
Well, it's got to be the start of food.
No, I mean,
there was no food before French fries.
But there was start of food.
It's the start of food. You know me and French fries. There's no food but French fries.
Okay, Chris, you're just a little early.
And is Lori a little late?
But you're early by about 300 years. So the Belgians invented French fries for the rest of the world in 1781. So that's kind of interesting.
Huh.
Okay, now I didn't know that Croatia is big for white truffles. It's how many people, travelers, head straight for Croatia to get their hands on the white truffles every single year? Yeah, they have, I mean, I guess it's a huge market. 3,000 every single year. Truffle buyers, these.
Close to Italy, right? I mean, it's right there. So I guess that kind of makes sense, right?
And what dogs do they have over there?
Oh, yeah. Lori does have a truffle dog.
Do you want to
export to Croatia?
Absolutely.
See, this, you do not have to go to Croatia. You just go to Lori Mack's yard.
Yeah.
And you
and
will
Jack's
see
digging
that
up.
He truffles everywhere. Dug up, buried, everything. Okay. So how about the Czech Republic? What's going on there? Mushrooms, of course. So the percentage of Czechs, so the people who live there, who pick mushrooms every single year, how many?
You want a percentage. Okay, I'm going to just say 25% of the people there.
70.
No.
Wow.
See, and here I bet you it's not even 1%.
Yeah.
Because we're so afraid of it. And there it's that big.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know a lot of people that go for mushrooms around here that go forage their own.
All right, here, I love this one. In Norway, the number of pounds that a king crab can weigh. So, Chris, in the past, king crab season comes in, you have brought us king crab.
We got to do that again now that you bring it up.
And it startled me. I didn't realize how big they were.
They get big.
It's astonishing. It's like a Volkswagen, it looks like. So, the number of pounds a king crab can weigh.
150.
No, 30.
Yeah. Well, 150 would be a Volkswagen.
Well, everybody's talking about it like
they are big, but their legs go out like that, right?
But
their bodies
like the
are
the boldness of your guest. I do. Yeah. I love that.
I've never seen a king crab like that.
But a 30-pound crab, could you imagine the crab legs on that have got to be like a baseball bat?
That's a lot of meat.
Okay, here, one more. No, two more.
Okay.
In Italy, the number of recorded pasta shapes. So in the country of Italy, how many do they have?
75.
We know certain ones. 75?
I'm going to go for over 100.
I think Lori's in the area, like 90. Let's say 90.
Okay, 310.
Holy moly.
Yeah. I'm always finding a new one. I'm just like, why didn't I ever hear that pasta shape and that pasta shape and that? I mean, it's every year I see new ones.
It's so exciting. And I hope more and more of them come here. Yeah. And finally, in Ireland, the first year Guinness was brewed.
The same year as the French fries, the 1500s. Because what goes better with French fries than Guinness?
And once again, you are off by about 300 years. 1759.
Wow.
But that's
cool.
One old brewery. Isn't that amazing?
But it actually is close to when the French fries really started.
Yes,
yeah,
it is.
Wow.
So So it goes to show you. It's always been the
Guinness thing. Yeah.
That's good beer, right? That is good beer.
Yes, it is.
Well, I just want to say there's not a single one of these I would have gotten right.
We really stunk.
Yeah.
That's okay. You're not supposed to.
I'm going to look for something that was created in the 1500s for next show.
Yeah. Right.
Just to have something that was done in the 1500s.
All right, here we go. We all have an invitation for you. Save the date. Thursday, June 19th, you are invited to be a top judge at the Faith Middleton Fuchsmoos Martini Competition. Lori and Chris and Jonathan will be there. CPTV will be there to film. You taste at all the cocktail stations. These are works of art themselves, these stations. You visit all the food stations, so you get great things to eat. We have top chefs doing that. And then everybody gets a ballot coming in the door, and so you vote for your favorite martini cocktail. These are innovative cocktails, and we have the best dance music around. It is a sellout experience, the hottest ticket in Connecticut. To compete as a bartender or to attend as a guest, you can go online right now. The tickets are for sale. We start now because these sell out. CTMartini.org. This is going to be held. It's the most fun of the year to benefit WNPR and CPTV at Riverview this time. Beautiful place in Simsbury, Connecticut at the Riverview. We thank Power Station Events for sound. And wait till you hear this sound. Fantastic, dramatic lighting. It is really fun, this event. So tickets have just gone on sale, $65 a person. Go to ctmartini.org. It's so great the way people get limos.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
You know, just crowds of people come. Everybody goes out. Everybody, you see every kind of dress.
Fun night.
The dancing starts. And then the innovation. Yeah. Well, we're going to be telling you about this as the months go on. All right, we're going to come to the recipe I've been telling you about that I just love because it's five ingredients, and you don't even have to write this down. We have more recipes, that crab lemon pasta coming up, the lobster quinoa salad. Quinoa is full protein. It is a full, I mean, it's the most amazing grain. And so I love the idea of lobster in a grain like this. And for all the paleo eaters, they like this too. It's kind of the grain you can get away with. Yeah. So we're going to get to that. But this recipe is really fun. I know we're all scallop fans in this room.
Love them.
And anything with citrus is always good, as far as I'm concerned.
Me too, Lori.
Love blood oranges, sorbets, and with shellfish, like Lori was saying. It's a great combination.
I think blood oranges are one of these stealth ingredients. A lot of us, I certainly did this for years, went through the supermarket and walked right by them because I would say, oh, blood oranges. And I wouldn't know really quite what to do with them because it's you just don't sit around. It's not like quite an eating orange. And so I thought, well, what is everybody doing with these besides slicing them and putting them in drinks?
Which is a good thing to do with
them. I started seeing recipes and trying them out, and I am such a fan.
And so for people who don't really know what blood oranges are. When you slice them, they're
dark, actually dark.
Rich red, like almost black. Right?
Ruby.
Yes, I was just going to say.
Ruby black, ruby. Right?
Right.
So, and their flavor of the juice from them is so exquisite. And the pulp, you even want some of that pulp in your recipe. It's so, so great. So many things to do with blood oranges.
It gives you that wow factor, too, in the right? Instead of, and you can use it in a lot of places. You see regular orange segments. And it gives you that pop of that color in the dish.
Beautiful. Looking, and it's much more complex than a regular orange, much more complex than a clementine. So really, really fun to use in your dishes. And so we have right now found this in Fine Cooking Magazine in last month's issue. And all you have to do, you don't have to write this down. We're going to give this to you after the break. All you have to do is just listen and relax, because this will make sense to you. That's how simple it is. This is the kind of cooking that we all love to do. You're just going to go by instinct. I'm not even going to use amounts with you. I'm just going to say, go to the store, get a blood orange, get some scallops, a little bit of onion or shallots. Shallots are nice. And some butter and olive oil you probably have in the house right now. That's it. That's how easy this is going to be. So all you do is just listen. So we'll get to our scallops with blood orange right after this break. I'm Faith Middleton. I hope you'll make a charitable contribution to feed the hungry. More mouthwatering conversation and fun here on the Food Schmooze. We'll be right back.
I don't want French fried potatoes, red ripe tomatoes. I'm never satisfied.
Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread.
Beans and cornbread had a fight. Beans knocked cornbread out of sight.
Beans.
Cornbread said, now that's all right.
Beans.
Meet me on the corner tomorrow night.
I'll be ready.
Cornbread, you ain't straight.
Beans.
You better wake up or I'll gas you gate.
Beans.
Been in this pot since 2:30.
Beans.
Swelling and puffing and almost due.
Sometimes we just have to hear the whole thing. I'm Faith Middleton. Don't you wish you were in that recording session? I would have given anything.
I really want to know what that song is about. Why are they so mad at each other, Beans and Cornbread?
Beans and Cornbread.
What happened?
Tension is at the heart of every good drama. The Food Schmooze Party here on WNPR is heard Wednesdays at 3 and 9, Saturdays at noon. Join the conversation with us on Facebook. Simply search The Faith Middleton Show. And it's on Facebook we're asking you, if you're a home cook and, you know, you love a particular recipe and when you serve it to people, they love it too, we would like an easy at-home recipe from you on Facebook, if you would. Because we'd like to, you know, spotlight these on the show. So all you have to do is jot it down. Go to Facebook, search the Faith Middleton Show. We said this last time, and we've got quite a number of these, and we're very excited. So please jump in. Just search the Faith Middleton Show. Thanks to our talented crew, senior contributor Chris Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, Eugenia Matruda, Marion Roy, senior producer Lori Mack, and producer Jonathan McNichol. WNPR's content director is Jim Cutie. We thank you first and foremost for listening. Okay, as promised, this recipe, as I mentioned, just in case you're joining us right now, is from Fine Cooking Magazine. It is just 5 ingredients. I was very excited because it involves 2 of the 5 ingredients. Blood oranges, available at any supermarket now, because this is their season, just like regular oranges. They're more complex, as we said, and scallops. So those 2 together, it's a beautiful, beautiful combination. Yeah. Here's what we mean by you don't have to write it down. 5 ingredients. I'm not even going to say amounts. You just picture it as I'm talking. And so here we go. So dry the scallops when you get home. They tend to be a little bit wet, and then they'll be able to brown a little bit. So you just dry them with a little paper towel. You've got a little salt and pepper on them.
Yeah, that's the way.
Okay, so you get out a nonstick pan, melt a little bit of butter in the pan, and a little bit of olive oil.
That's it.
You've
Easy.
Got that in the house. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Put them on medium-high heat. Yep. And you want medium-high because that's going to give a little browning on the outside of the scallops. When the pan is hot, you toss in the scallops. And you cook them 2-3 minutes on one side. So you can do this up to now, right? You just want the scallop to be brown on one side. What do? Flip them over and get them brown on the other side. But on this side, you're just going to spend like 2 minutes. So when you're done, you take those scallops out of the pan, transfer them to a plate.
That's it.
So all we have done in that pan is a little salt and pepper on dry scallops. We have had a little butter and olive oil in that pan. Probably total of 5 minutes these scallops have been in the pan. We took them out, and now they're at a plate over there. Look at the pan. You've got a little butter and olive oil in there. What are you going to do with it? So you're going to add just a touch more butter is what you're going to do. And you toss in some chopped shallots. Yeah. If you have onions, go ahead. Chopped shallots. And you cook for about 2 minutes. And those shallots start to get a little bit soft. And then you just put the juice of 1 blood orange.
Oh,
squeeze
I can handle
it right
that.
In there.
That's it. And you just swish the pan around a little bit. Right, Chris?
That's it.
And
simple.
It is that. And then what do? Pour it over the scallops sitting right next to you on that plate. And then serve away. Yeah. So we want to say thank you to Tony Rosenfeld. How easy is that? Shallots and blood orange, scallops, and a little olive oil and butter. Salt and pepper.
No recipe needed.
No recipe needed. You just put in as many shallots as you want, use as many scallops as you want, butter and olive oil as you want. Just go for it.
How about the orange? I might get 2 oranges.
If you're like me and you like to sop it up with your bread afterwards.
Mm. Well, Lori, I think what's really smart about what you're saying there is that if you make twice the sauce, you can save some of that sauce at the end, put it in a container, and the next night when you have rice make that into a kind of seafood, a scallop blood orange sauce on your rice, and you can just put anything on that or serve it with anything, alongside anything. What a delicious. Yeah. People will think you've made risotto. Your family will be so excited, or your mate.
That's the key to cooking, is these little things that you wouldn't think of, but saving that sauce and pouring it over rice, and you don't have plain rice.
That would end up in the refrigerator for a long time with me.
Your house?
To the point where I'd see it in a container and think, what's this?
What was that?
Yeah. And you know what?
Chris, you could freeze it.
You could freeze it, but you know what? This is the thing. You have to go through your refrigerator every once in a while.
Yeah.
In a restaurant, we do it twice a day.
But
you want to use it.
Do you remember the great tip from one of the listeners who said she keeps a kind of basket box of kind, that fits in the shelves. And one of them is, she puts several in, but one of them is for things I have to use up.
Which would mean compost for me.
Well,
no, but it's a great idea because you could pull that whole tray or box or whatever it is out, put it on the counter.
She was so
of throwing it away.
Throwing stuff away, as we all do. So.
I've seen reports on what Americans throw away every year in food, and it's just, it's the money. Forget about the food, the money. It's just, it's a vacation.
You've taught me, Chris, the way you so often talk about rummaging through your refrigerator and taking everything, including things that are on their way out, and putting it into that soup. that you make from scratch. A couple of cans of chopped tomatoes.
Oh my gosh, the soup we're serving right now is
kind of semi-old celery.
My chef made too much mashed potatoes on Saturday night, you know, and we had these big buckets of leftover mashed potatoes. They were still good mashed potatoes, but we had way too much. So I just sautéed some leeks, threw the mashed potatoes in, pureed it, and I have potato leek soup.
Oh,
already
wow.
Cream added.
And there's still obviously, you know, April. You never know. It could be anything. But in April, we've still got some chill in the air. It can be freezing. It can be warm.
Snowing.
But there's still enough time for soup.
Yeah.
And so I say, let's get our last soups in. You know, those kind of wintry fall soups, you know, spring soups. Get them in there. Because it's, you know, they're
What's
fun.
Your favorite?
These are the last soup. Oh, I love homemade soup.
What, do you have a favorite? Do you have like a go-to?
I have so many.
Yeah. Split pea.
Split pea.
I do a chicken soup with lots of meat in it, lots of cilantro.
Nice.
At the last minute, and rice or quinoa.
Squeeze a lemon or lime on it.
Right. I go in that sort of, you know, Thai, Asian kind of way. I put just a touch of fish sauce in it. So it's not a traditional it's not a traditional thing.
But leftovers. That's what you make soup out of, is leftovers. You don't go to the store and buy ingredients. I always say we never go and buy ingredients to make soup at my restaurant. We just use whatever's there. Sometimes you have more of one thing or something didn't sell as well, and then that becomes a great soup.
When I make a chicken soup, I'll just throw the chicken in water and, you know, start to get it going. And then I've made my own kind of chicken stock. But there are times when I'm just grabbing cans of chicken stock. Does anybody have a favorite here? I know that a lot of taste tests have selected Swanson's, but I wonder, there's so many chemicals in these stocks, and I'm trying to find...
Swanson's has done a 180 from where they used to be, because we did a taste test where they were the worst. And now, because I saw the reports you're talking about that say that they're really good, so I had to go back and revisit that, and their newer ones are pretty good. The other one I like is Pacific. Have you ever seen that one? That's an all-natural.
That's an organic.
But you know what? This is what I do. And it's not just because I'm cheap, but it's partially because I'm cheap. But whenever I'm in the supermarket and I see those things on sale, like sometimes they'll have them 2 for $5 or whatever, I stock up.
You mean the stock?
Yeah, I stock up with the stock. Because they can be pricey sometimes, but when you see them on sale, and especially if it's a 2 for $1, I buy 4.
Well, this goes in the box in the pantry of this has a window, because if I stock up on stock, I forget about it in my pantry, and then I'm looking at it when I need it, and it's expired.
Oh, see, I use it a lot. Like, I use it in pastas, too. Like, if you're making a pasta sauce, I will use broth in there, either vegetable broth or a beef broth or a chicken broth. You know, and it's great. It has that little spout now, so it's very clean, the box. So as you're making things, I just always go to it and have it sitting on the stove when I'm making stuff.
So that's a wonderful idea, to put your chicken or beef stock or vegetable stock into your pasta sauce. And so you do it to beef it up, to give it a richness?
I always say it adds the base to the dish, right?
So I sometimes cook rice or quinoa, whatever it is, in chicken stock. Do folks do that ever?
Fantastic idea. Because, again, it's not just water, so it's adding more flavor. But cooking it in beef broth or chicken broth, it adds a little more dimension to it.
About those boxes with the spouts that you can take in and out of the refrigerator, how long do you think they last after you've opened them?
I always say a week if your refrigerator is
good. Well, they'll tell you right on the box, they will say, and I just pretty much follow their instructions, but there's one thing I always do, and smell it.
Yep.
And if anything is questionable, if it smells slightly funky, that's the end of it, because that's one area we're not going to take chances, right?
But use it. That's the thing. You know, it's like I always say the spices. You have the best tip in the world about spices. Don't buy a lot, because it'll sit there and just go stale on you. Buy a little bit, but you still have to use it, right? You have to keep using these things over and over again, and it makes you more creative.
Because the internet is what it is for food now, I love it that people will Google a single ingredient, because that's what they have. What can I do with this? What can I do with this spice? What can I do with this vegetable that I, in a moment of craziness, bought in the supermarket? You know, I can't even spell what it is. It's from some country. What can I do with this? And recipes come up.
It's changed everything.
I just love that.
I have a friend that actually will, like, pull 4 things out of the fridge because they have it. It has to be used. And they'll Google all 4 in a string of words. And then the recipe recipes will actually come up with those ingredients in it. And the ones that have all of them will be the first ones, and then it'll go filter down. But again, you could actually say, I have potatoes, cheese, milk, and chicken.
Well, so if there's anything, if there's anything that's done a lot for what's in season, I think it is the internet, because you can say, oh, you know, this would be fun to start going to farmers markets, or when your supermarket has something that's local or just in season, and that might be peas, it might be asparagus, it might be spring lamb, whatever it is. To then just design around what's fresh. And you just go online, of course, and say, what are fun ways that I could make this spring lamb?
And this isn't just for home cooks. My farm, Holcomb Farm, is at the end of their root cellar. And right now, what all they have left for me is 200 pounds of watermelon radishes.
Wow.
And I promised I would use everything in the root cellar. And I have to stick to my promise. So I, every day, my team of cooks come in and they have to come in with a recipe. What are you going to do with 250 pounds? It's in everything right now. But they're wonderful things. We found that you can roast them. We found you could steam them. My chef made an amazing roasted sesame dish for tuna this weekend.
Really? Yeah. What happens when you roast radishes?
When you roast the watermelon radish, they lose that bite and they get more sweet.
Oh.
It's amazing. They move that.
Is that,
you know, the
just
radish
the
bite?
Watermelon one?
I don't know. I've never
if
roasted
you have
other
never
ones.
Seen a watermelon radish, I encourage you to have a look. It is such a beautiful thing. I started to get into the habit. I guess this is a little bit about doing the table. I have a platter on the dining room table that sits up on a kind of pedestal. And I thought, why do I have to put only food in here? Why can't I put, so I started putting fruit, you know, lemons and oranges and limes. And then I thought, why can't I put vegetables in here? So I had a dinner party and I put radishes with the greens on top. I put scallions. Yeah. It was like a beautiful painting. And I thought, this is so fun. And then when it was over, into the refrigerator it went, and then I used all those things. So we run out and we get flowers for people coming over for dinner, which is beautiful. But why not?
Here you go. Got you a whole bunch of vegetables for your centerpiece.
I would love that.
Yeah, I agree.
Feel
the
free,
colors,
people.
Right? It's all about the colors. And again, the flowers have the colors, but so do the fruits and
those
vegetables.
Those radishes, though. Talk about color.
Yeah. So if you want
watermelon
more.
Ones, we...
I've got... Anyone wants any, stop by. I would literally give
tops.
You back.
Are the tops on them?
No, these are root cellared, so the tops are long gone.
Okay.
So these are just the radishes.
So they become sweeter
they
when
become
you roast
sweeter
them.
When
do you do
roast
olive oil?
We do olive oil, salt, and pepper. And then, like I said...
400?
400 degrees till they get crispy. And then we had a chef for
good.
A day, you know, the people that come in and they win these things in auctions and stuff, and they spend the day in the kitchen. So, of course, we had one in the other day, and what are we going to have them do? Here, have some watermelon radishes. Go ahead and play. And this guy, who was a doctor, made a great dish with roasted watermelon radishes, and then he's just like, I like the taste of it. He tasted it, and it was just salt and pepper on it. And he's like, I want to make a tapenade. I'm like, go for it. So he did diced sun-dried tomatoes, olives, and then he caramelized two giant onions and put it in there with a little balsamic and olive oil. And it was amazing. Sometimes the best dishes come when you're forced. I always say when I give my chef too much, nothing comes from it. But when you give them one ingredient, you're blown out of the water what comes out of it.
And we see TV shows built all around this principle. You know, you have this is your main ingredient, Iron Chef. Yeah. You know, it made it look where it went based on that. In cooking school, do they do that? Do they say, here's an ingredient, make something?
They'll more give you a mystery basket of like the five ingredients you said. You know, in that recipe with the scallops. And then it's pretty interesting to see what 10 different chefs will make out of the same five ingredients.
So you can't add to it. You have to stick with the way Iron Chef, you can add a million things.
Well, you can at school, you can add like salt, pepper, that kind
butter,
of stuff. But
olive.
Not like, yeah, no, not bring in 800 other items. No, you're basically stuck with those five items and, you know, your basic pantry stuff like salt, pepper, olive oil, and that kind of stuff.
Does it feel scary or fun?
Both. It's exciting and it's fun because you really start thinking, and it's a great way to train young chefs about what goes with what. And this is how recipes are developed, right? So you have to think about, does peanut butter go with marshmallow? Because sometimes the ingredients are really crazy. And of course, peanut butter goes really well with marshmallow.
Don't you wonder who first tried that?
It's a great combination.
I'm surprised they're not a friend of mine, really.
Can we look that up? Yeah.
The 1500s.
1960.
Lori and I are stuck on this, right? Okay, Lori, next week you have to come in with something created in 1960.
Everything was created in 1960.
Once again, you are off by
300 years.
They say you can Google absolutely anything. So I want to see what happens when you put in who first tried marshmallow and peanut butter. Who invented marshmallow and peanut butter? I bet it's a company.
Could be a person.
I'm thinking Kraft.
Kraft. Or Nestle's.
There's a lot of different ways to look at it, so 1960 is a valid answer. During World War I is when the first recipe for a marshmallow cream and peanut butter sandwich was published.
Ooh.
The term fluffernutter was invented by an ad agency in the 1960s.
Lori, you were right.
Actually, in 1960, so specific to the year.
Oh, thank you. Wow. Thank you.
So there's no 1500s in there.
Ad agency means that it's got to be, you know, an ad agency madman representing Kraft, Nestle's,
right,
it has to be. Yeah. So, interesting. Fluffernutter was the, that was smart. I hope somebody was paid a lot of money.
Money for Fluffernutter.
Yeah, over many martinis.
Yeah. And popular. Kids still love it, right?
So here's an example. This is a perfect example of how you can go on the internet regarding food and find absolutely anything. We've got the quinoa lobster salad for you, the crab lemon pasta coming your way. Quickly, the River Cafe on the Brooklyn banks of the East River, one of the most romantic, fabulous places. Oh, what a thing this is. They were wrecked during Hurricane Sandy, and they are back. Buzzy O'Keefe has reopened his doors.
Fantastic.
Everybody, if you've never done this, River Cafe in Brooklyn on the East River. Romantic beyond belief. Anybody wants to propose, this is
gorgeous
the place to do it. This
city,
is where a
right?
lot of people do it. Yes.
Gorgeous.
All right, please support your local food growers and food makers. Find the food, wine, recipes, and cocktails we feature anytime online at WNPR.org. There are things up there right now, our recipes, the ones we're going to talk about next. Click on Programs for the Faith Middleton Show. More delicious conversation after a quick break. Please stay with us.
Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you apple, a plum, and a apricot or two. Come on to my house, come on. Come on to my house, come on. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you figs and dates and grapes and cakes. Come on to my house, come on. Come on to my house, come on. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you candy. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you everything.
I'm Faith Middleton with the gang, and this is the Food Schmooze Party coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. You can tweet us at FaithWNPR. That's FAITHWNPR. And to join the conversation with us on Facebook, search the Faith Middleton Show. I am with Chris Brosberry of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, producers Lori Mack and Jonathan McNichol. We are doing the Food Schmooze. It's great to have you with us. So we want to talk about this new cookbook that has come out. It's called Fresh, Happy, Tasty, and this is a Jane Coxwell. Come on to my house is the perfect intro for this because I thought, what if your house is on the water? Because this is what we're talking about.
Crazy.
Jane Coxwell is a yacht chef. Now, her story is fascinating. Yes, we're going to get to the lemon crab tomato spaghetti, and we're also going to get to the quinoa lobster salad that we just ate. Yeah, really good. Both of them, so good. So here's the deal. Jane Coxwell had learned about food, loved food, just out of college, goes to Europe, is in France, and she has about, I think, what it was, 200 euros to her name, or 20.
Yeah.
And she sees a book, and it says, How to Be a Yacht Chef. And she buys it with her pennies and says, I'm going to specialize
Inspiration.
In this. Inspiration. Wow. Yeah. Studies up on it, and sure enough, markets herself to these folks, and they start hiring her, and she becomes a yacht chef exclusively. Yeah. And on she goes from one, you know, group to the next, and she's having a grand old time, I guess, and really liking this. And she ends up being hired. Talk about if you're going to be a yacht chef, this would be possibly a dream job. She gets hired by media mogul Barry Diller, and designer Diane von Furstenberg, who are married to each other, to be the installed chef on their grand yacht, which is called the Eos. And so this is what she does.
Wow.
So she has traveled all over the world with them. I mean, everywhere, every region, every country. And, you know, I would imagine this is possibly a kitchen that might be bigger than a lot of our home kitchens. But still.
There's,
you know,
challenges.
Yes, because you don't have a tremendous amount of refrigerator room.
Yeah.
But she, luckily, and I'm sure this is why she appeals to them, she's very interested in fresh ingredients. She's interested in global flavors. And what an experience going from region to region around the world, finding out about the spices, the vegetables, the fruits, and incorporating them.
And figuring out how long these things are going to last on your trip.
Yeah.
And planning the meals.
Right. Exactly.
That must be quite a challenge.
Talk about meal planning, right?
Yes.
When you're doing those cross-Atlantic, you got to take everything with you. There's no stopping.
Right.
And you have to get, you know, the guests. It's quite an array of guests that the Furstenberg and Diller are entertaining. Yeah. Everybody's got food issues.
Dietary restrictions.
And they can't bring along their friends because you've only allotted for so many.
Yeah. Plus
if you
six.
Run out of something, you are in big trouble.
Now, my cousin does this, and it's a fascinating lifestyle. And she always said, I remember, like, when she'd be home and she wouldn't be around for more than a day or two here and there. She said it was a calling, that the sea called her, and that once you're out there, you don't want to ever come back. It's like I said, it's a totally different lifestyle than you and I and anyone else that lives on land lives.
I can picture that. I really can, except that I would miss my friends too much. Yeah. I don't know. I guess I couldn't do it. I'd make new ones, but I don't want to give,
like,
up the old ones.
A lot of these ships go to the same places, so you meet friends and then you say, hey, look, there's that other ship. I know those people. And then you go out together as friends. And cooking on these ships is totally different than cooking on land. You have different things you have to worry about. Like, I remember the first time she showed me one of her yachts, the stoves aren't on the floor. They're hanging from the ceiling.
Oh.
Right? And they can switch back and forward. But that makes sense, right? As the boat moves, the stove needs to move back and forward.
To stay level.
And then, to top it all off, the pots latch on to the top of the stove.
Isn't that great? Yes,
right?
Because
slide off the stove. Now think about that as a challenge, another challenge in the kitchen.
Cooking is a moving target.
You don't
That's
fill your
amazing.
Pots all the way to the top because there's still a little sloshing here and there.
There's a comment from Jane Coxwell in this book, in the acknowledgments, which I always read to see, you know, what's going on behind the scenes. And she thanks the crew of this yacht. And she said, you know, there's not a tighter group of friends. And so I would imagine you make some kind of family. You know, with such a peripatetic life, you somehow find a way. And so this is clearly what they've done. They spent a lot of time together. And so here it is. I'm just turning to this page. 200 euros. That's what she had in France to her name. So
not a lot of money.
Yeah.
So here's where she's been. She has been to Southeast Asia, New Zealand, Australia, Papua New Guinea, French Polynesia, the Caribbean, Central America, the United States, all over, as you can imagine, all the ports and whatnot. So amazing, an amazing life.
Fascinating way to see the world.
I like her recipes a lot. Here we go. Let's talk about some of these. I think because this is on our website right now, we should get to the two ones that we've chosen for our site. So these are up right now. Quinoa lobster salad and a crab tomato and lemon spaghetti. Doesn't that sound good? Okay. We just ate that lobster quinoa, and Chris, thank you for making it for us. This is, I guess, Diane von Furstenberg. This is one of her favorite things, and she requests this frequently. Yeah, so quinoa is what I call the super grain because it is a complete protein, very high in protein content for a grain. So people who are doing paleo eating, which is essentially protein and vegetables, and minimal sugars, almost no grains, no dairy, kind of. And I've been eating that way and really liking it just to, you know, and I've just adored it because I love protein, as they say. So quinoa is one of the grains
you can have.
Yeah, because it's so high in. And so when people are having pasta, I'm often doing all the great sauces on my quinoa.
As I was making this, I thought pasta salad. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is pasta. And then you're just like, wow, she substituted quinoa. And why not? I've made different salads with quinoa, but I've never made a mayonnaise-based one. It's a fascinating, twist on the pasta salad.
It's up there right now. So if you want to see it now as we talk, you can at WNPR.org. Here it is. So, Chris, let me say the ingredients. Mm-hmm. I think this is interesting because Jane uses not the whole lobster. She goes out and buys just the lobster tail so that it's easier for her. She doesn't have to clean all the lobsters, go through all this stuff.
And small refrigerators.
And it's more economical, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, small refrigerators. You're right, Chris. So here we go. And Chris, she also says that you can use lobster meat. If you're someone who can buy good, fresh lobster meat and you want to do it that way, you can.
Then okay. I suggest it because then that takes a whole step out of the recipe.
Well, except that I want a little bit more lobster than
I
that.
Know,
and so
but
I can't
know
afford a hand-picked lobster meat. So lobster tails that she cuts in half with kitchen scissors and a little olive oil, some dry white wine, maybe a Sauvignon Blanc, a sprig of fresh dill, some salt, pepper, the uncooked quinoa, cherry tomatoes, mayonnaise, garlic cloves. If you're someone who can't have mayonnaise, maybe you could use a yogurt or creme fraiche or something. Red onion, a jar of prepared horseradish, Tabasco, lemon, some fresh mint, some parsley, fresh parsley. And she puts in just a tiny bit of agave nectar for a little sweetener in this. How easy was this?
Yeah, I mean, first you start with those first ingredients and you roast the lobster tails, which I think is a great way to cook lobster.
Because it concentrates that burning
flavor. The flavor. You put it with the dill. The dill really comes out in the lobster meat, a little bit of salt. So just about 20 minutes in the oven, and then you take that out and let it cool, right? And then now you're going to start the quinoa part. Cooking quinoa, if you've never done it, is as easy as boiling pasta because that's exactly what you do.
You don't even rinse yours, Chris.
Don't even rinse mine, no, because you're boiling it in water and you're straining it. So again, cook the quinoa in boiling water for 15 minutes, drain it, and then return it to the saucepan. And you basically put it back on a low heat to just dry it out for about a minute, stirring it with a spoon, you know, and then it's totally dry. And then you're going to take that warm quinoa and throw it in a large bowl. Because now it's fluffy, right? If you've ever made quinoa, it's really cool to see when it sort of pops open. And then you mix it in with the tomatoes, the mayonnaise, garlic, onion, horseradish, Tabasco, and lemon juice. Mix.
Good. It was great.
Yeah, and then the lobster meat has to go in. And she suggests just taking the lobster meat and just breaking up the meat into chunks, you know, little chunks, big chunks, whatever you want, and toss that in. And then right at the last minute, a little more lemon juice, check the salt and pepper. And then that's when she adds the agave.
So again, if you say, oh, I'm not so sure on horseradish, or I'm afraid the horseradish will overwhelm the flavor of the lobster, and I don't want that to happen, then you use just a speck of it, or you don't use any of it. You can do whatever you want. But here is the recipe, and it's at our site right now at WNPR.org. Click on Programs for the Faith Middleton Show. You will see the Food Schmooze link. Delicious,
Chris. Yeah, but how about shrimp?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Or if you don't like shellfish or if you have a shellfish problem, I think this would be awesome as is without the fish.
Yeah. I would also, yes, but I would also put chunks of other fish in here.
Sure.
I would put swordfish in here,
salmon.
You know, cubed up a tuna in a minute. So, again, you can play.
Sure.
It doesn't have to just.
Tuna would be great in that.
Really would.
Totally.
I'd do a really high-end
tuna,
though.
Okay.
Not,
the olive oil one.
One of those
Spanish
ones in olive oil.
Because which. It is Diane von Furstenberg's.
Well, no, she's great. I got to say, I love her. I really think she's quite the genius. I can't imagine she wouldn't have fabulous taste in food. So we're going to talk more about the life of this yacht chef who works for them, Jane Coxwell. Her book is Fresh, Happy, Tasty, An Adventure in 100 Recipes. Let's go right to crab, tomato, and lemon spaghetti. We have just put this up at the website, too. What's great about this is if you're someone who's not a mayonnaise fan, because we've learned in the Food Schmooze, there are people who can't tolerate mayonnaise. I always try to remember that. This calls for yogurt in this pasta. And so it makes for a healthier sauce for some people than a cream-based one would. And it adds a kind of interesting depth and flavor to the recipe. Because when you pair yogurt with crab and lemon, that's a good combo right there. Let me say the ingredients, and then we'll talk about how this comes together. A little bit of olive oil, extra virgin olive oil, some chopped red onion. Jane, the chef here, loves red onion. It is her go-to onion. She thinks the other onions are too oniony. And so she
I love her.
She uses red onion in about everything. So a couple garlic cloves and the pasta of your choice. And if you're gluten-free, of course, you use your pasta. If you want quinoa because it's higher in protein, use that. Some fresh crab meat. The fresher the crab meat, the more expensive it's going to be. So that's how that goes.
Yeah. And then you can fight.
And the better it's going to be.
And then you can fight about where the boat is, right? If you're in the Chesapeake Bay, you got to have blue crab. But if you're out in Seattle, right? Oh, don't even mention the blue crab.
Or if you're floating in Stop and Shop.
Yeah. is that where your yacht
yes,
goes?
Right.
Right down
I'm
to the fish aisle.
So tomatoes, and we have plain yogurt. It's got to be plain. Fresh lemon, and she loves Maldon sea salt because that's the one that's flaky and, you know, feels like it's, which it is, just straight from the sea. Not a lot of chemicals or any chemicals in it. So that's always her go-to salt. Some parsley. She has parsley in so many things. So crab, tomato, and lemon spaghetti on our website right now. That's not a complicated list of ingredients and available to all of us. I would go to a fish market to get your fresh crab if you can. I would do that. Chip in with a couple friends to do it if it feels too expensive. So out comes the saute pan. You heat the olive oil in that pan. It's low heat. And then you add the red onion and a couple cloves of garlic. And it just sits in there for about 4 minutes. It's on low heat. So it's what we call sweating it,
yeah.
You know? Right, Chris? Low heat.
And the smells, right?
Yeah. So it means it's softened, but it doesn't have any color. So that's a tip. Then, while you're doing that, or while that's going on, you got 4 minutes. So you put some salted water, bring it to a boil on the stovetop, because you're going to cook the pasta according to spaghetti to package directions. And then you drain it, of course, but you save a cupful of that water, of that cooking liquid. Then you, in the saute pan sitting there with that garlic in it and the onion, you're going to add the fresh crab meat and the sliced tomatoes to the saute pan. Very gently you're cooking it for 5 minutes, very low heat. Then you stir in the plain yogurt. Take it off the heat because you don't want that to curdle. And you season with a good squeeze of lemon and some salt and pepper. Taste it to see how you like it. Add the pasta right into that saute pan along with a tablespoon of that cooking water. And that's what keeps the strands from getting too sticky.
I was thinking to myself, you know where this recipe came from, right? It has to be one of those recipes where she had – I mean, think about it. You're on a ship. Your supplies are somewhat limited, even after you just resupply, because you have these small kitchens and small refrigerators and freezers and stuff. And I'm sure she's like, I got yogurt. I got pasta.
I got
crab. I got some crab meat. And, you know, and we were talking about that earlier. You know, when you have less ingredients, you're more inspired to find these great combinations.
I so get that. And I bet that does happen to her. Although here's what I'm thinking, Chris. I am thinking, when you are the head chef to Barry Diller and Diane von Furstenberg, I bet there's a lot of planning. And so they say, here's who's coming for the dinner party on such and such. We'd like to do it on the boat, Eos. And, well, now let's discuss the menu.
Yes,
and
that's
then,
true.
So she probably.
But a little of both.
I don't doubt that when Diller and Furstenberg are out cruising around just for fun, the two of them, that this does happen, what you're describing. Yeah. So,
and I'm not picturing that galley kitchen to be all that small
as
either.
Small as it might be.
No, even on some of these larger yachts, they're still not what you think of as these huge, not like on the cruise ship where there's 100 cooks cooking in them. Right?
No,
they're really,
but also not your standard boat. Either.
No, not your boat, your sailboat, right, with the little gap. No, but they're still tiny,
reportedly
small,
a gorgeous yacht, by the way.
Yeah.
So crab, tomato, and lemon spaghetti right up on our website right now for the Fuchsmas. So you go to WNPR.org and click on programs for the Faith Middleton Show, and you will see it. Fresh, Happy, Tasty is the name of Jane Coxwell's book. There is a foreword, of course, by Diane von Furstenberg. So many good meals coming her way. Jane Coxwell's story is pretty interesting. She grew up in South Africa. Just in case you love to hear about ingredient combinations, because that gives you ideas when you're cooking, she does a brie grape and arugula salad, breaking the brie up into little pieces. She uses quinoa to make a risotto. So she's right up my alley. Thank you all so much. Lori Jonathan and Chris Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut. The Food Schmooze on WNPR airs Wednesdays at 3 and 9 p.m., Saturdays at noon. We're online anytime. Find the recipes, food products, restaurants, value wines, and easy cocktails we feature at WNPR.org. Click on programs for the Faith Middleton Show. Here's to pleasure, my friends. And remember, never eat more than you can lift. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.
Everybody eats when they come to my house.